What's up, guys? Welcome to this episode of Unemployable. Today, we talk about our journey with the pod at the very beginning, and we ask for your feedback on what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and how we can improve. And if you've been interested in podcasting, you'll get a real behind-the-scenes look at how we've been doing this and what we've learned in the last year and almost a half of trying to start this. Then we turn the conversation, interestingly, to a post that Mark made during the week on his Instagram, where he posted a graph, looked like an options graph or something, and he said, "It looks like I'm about to make a shitload of money." And so me, being a options moron who knows nothing really about options trading in the market, and the other two guys who are the same, really went in deep with Mark, said, "Mark, let's really understand, like, how are you going to make a shit ton of money? How have you made a shit ton of money with options in the past? And what are like the real net returns that somebody could expect from doing what you do by betting on global macro trends?" But we stop him like every 30 seconds, every time he says something we don't understand, which is often, we stop him and go, "Mark, stop, stop, explain. You're talking about, you know, treasury yields are spiking. What's a treasury yield? What's making it spike? And why should we give a shit about that?" So it's an interesting discussion. By the end of it, we're all like blown away when we talked about what Mark's doing. We're seeing actual real numbers. We talk about a mate of ours who recently made $1 million in a week trading options, how he's a complete degenerate of a human and a brilliant guy. But we tell the story of how these guys are doing this stuff. So it's a good pod. I think you'll really like it. So remember, if you like the content, like, subscribe, and comment beneath so that we know. But as I said, this pod's in really two parts. It takes a hard right turn about 20 minutes in. I hope you enjoy it. We'll see you in the next one. What's up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of Unemployable. We are coming to you once again from all corners of the globe. I am in Ayia Napa in Cyprus today. And then we got James repping hard from Burley Heads. We got Eric in the studio and Mark down in the one and only Byron Bay. Welcome to the pod, boys. How y'all doing?
Doing good, man. You're looking tanned.
Mate, I've been out in the ocean here over the Easter weekend, and mate, if you guys saw the ocean here, you'd understand why. It is so beautiful here, such a beautiful spot.
But I've been looking at your Instagram, and I've been like, man, I need to get over there real quickly. Ayia Napa looks beautiful.
It's incredible. It's just coming into summer, so the season's starting to warm up here, and it's really good. But lots going on in the world at the moment. Oh, my God. Like, just, you know, leading into the election, you know, Trumpy doing what he's doing. So much going on. And I thought it might be interesting, guys, to kick off today with a little bit of a sharing for the audience about the pod itself, because the pod is evolving quickly. There's a lot of things happening in the background, some of which we can't talk about just at the moment. But I think it's fair to say that it is surprising all of us, you know, who's actually watching this podcast and how quickly the podcast is growing. Mark, we got asked in, I think it was November, December, you know, where we thought our subs would be. And all of us were wrong because the target has already been passed. Other than Mark, all of us sort of said, oh, we might get to 15,000 subs by the end of this year, 2025. We've already passed that at the start, really, of this year. And we're growing so quickly that it could be you know, much bigger number than that. But what's really interesting is who's watching. But I just wanted to give you guys listening a bit of a behind the scenes of, you know, some of what we're doing in terms of growing the pod and trying to figure this out and what it's really like behind the curtain. And, you know, for the first thing I want to share is that we have a WhatsApp group, which is all four of us, plus our production team and people who have input from the editor, to our shorts and reels guys, to Perry, who runs the business and the back end of everything. And we share information through the week and ideas and all that sort of stuff. But the subject that sort of caught, you know, yesterday was just like, where are we going with this pod? And it's really been an interesting journey, because when we started this a year ago, none of us had actually done a podcast. Like, we've been guests on podcasts, but we've never actually produced a podcast. And you know, we just sort of saw smart people doing them, you know, people that we admired in business and that we were learning from, and thought they must be doing this for a reason. And so we started. And that's, you know, the hardest thing in business. So many people talk themselves out of actually starting. They overthink things sometimes rather than just getting going, finding out quickly and failing fast if they have to. So we sort of started with, you know, we tried to emulate, I guess, and copy. Remember when we first started, the first pods were like, we were copying the PBD show. So we'd sort of pick, you know, four or five usually US-centric topics, and we'd grab some clips, and it was a whole lot of work, and it just didn't seem to be flowing. And then we just sort of said, how about we just have a yak about our week in business? And then all of a sudden, it just flowed, and it was far less preparation, and it worked a lot better. And now that we're sort of coming into like our fifth or sixth quarter, we're sort of starting to really think about like, we've got the Tuesday pod that comes out, which is usually a studio interview on the Gold Coast. Then we've got the Friday session that comes out, which is what you're watching now. And then we've recently introduced the property sessions and also a Bitcoin focused interview once every 2 weeks. So maybe you could sort of, Mark or Eric or James, anyone, just sort of share what we talked a little bit about, you know, this week in the pod, like what we were trying to sort of uncover as we sort of scratched on, you know, like where are we heading with this thing?
Let me share before, just to touch on that point before where we're heading with it, could you sort of touch on it just briefly about what it was like to actually start and do the starting for people? I've never been, like you said, that we've probably all been on podcasts. I've never been on camera before, and I was literally shitting my pants to the point where I was taking, you know, beta blockers and whatnot, and would study the night before and who the guest was and the whole lot. And it was so inauthentic. And then when we stopped doing all that, I know Eric did as well, because we've just shared this discussion, to the point where we went, you know what, let's just rock up and just have, like you would when you meet someone fresh out of the gate, have a conversation, how are you, who are you, and let it roll from there. So that was the first part of it. And it was fairly nerve-wracking. So to the message to anyone that's thinking about doing something like this is, yeah, I mean, it might look good now, but it certainly was a shit show to start with behind the scenes. And to where we are now, to Adam's point about where do we want to actually take this? And there's some, as you said, there's some peripheral conversations going on that can't be sort of voiced at the minute. But yeah, I just sort of give that context about it's hard for everyone. Yeah. And even like yourself, Adam, you've done a lot of public speaking and on a lot of huge, huge platforms, but the other three of us haven't. And so the context there wasn't, a natural gift for the three of us.
Was like, you know, Eric and I spent months fitting out the studio that's behind Eric there in the image here. And then we had this beautiful studio with these TVs on the walls, and like $250,000 was spent fitting that joint out. And then we had like it all set to go, and we're like, oh shit, now there's just four chairs, and we've actually got to fill an hour of what they call dead air, which is how do you produce content for an hour from like nothing? And you got like two videographers there when we first started. And, you know, the answer, guys, is that you figure it out. Like the old saying, entrepreneurship is jumping off a cliff and figuring out how to build a plane on the way down. That's what this podcast has been. And, you know, this morning we had kind of I'm here in Cyprus, but I got a text yesterday from a very, very high profile Australian from the sporting and political landscape. I don't know how he got my number, but I rang him this morning from Cyprus. We chatted for half an hour. And the people like him and his network that are now watching the pod blows my mind. Like that we, you know, we've grown to that from just this starting of like, all right, what the hell do we actually do here? And the reason we're on the call is because he's watched the pod and interested in coming on and having his ideas heard as well, which we're trying to organize at the moment. So I guess the message I just want to share with everybody is that we're sort of really now digging into like, what is the focus? And what we sort of came to is like, we're really realizing from the data what you guys want. Like we're seeing trends that are emerging. And I'd be interested if you've got comments on this, and you can comment below the pod today. But we're noticing that like the stories that seem to hit most for the Tuesday pod, which is where we interview a guest, the ones that seem to hit most are the ones that are like accessible side hustles and businesses that people can start. Things like we've had like the co-founder of Zero One. And I think personally, it was one of the best pods we've done. The guy's built a $25 billion company. And I'm not sure that podcast has actually broken 1,000 views yet, right? Whereas we bring on someone like Brooke Triplett, who is teaching everyday Aussies how to, you know, do remote sales so they can live in Bali or live in Cyprus or live in Europe and live in Australia and just move around and like make really good money doing remote sales. That just hit and boomed and went nuts. So I think it's that accessible real side hustles that people can start for like under $100,000 that can give them geo sort of freedom. They seem to be really resonating. Female founded seems to be really resonating, and product and stories around really interesting products and services that get the creative mind going seem to hit. But I'd love your feedback in the comments as to what you want to hear on those. As for these Friday sessions, it seems to be that we're just four guys who are sharing our real life investment and business lessons from the week or what we're doing right now. And it's just like you guys sitting in and having a listen to what we're thinking about, what we're doing, who we're meeting, the deals that we're making and so on. So if you could just give us feedback in the comments, that would be good. And also then, of course, there's the Bitcoin focus and the real estate focus, which are kind of self-explanatory.
And then also there's another piece about we built this, as you said, I'm not saying with the four rogues, but it's as you get to a point where you start to get a bit of viewership from some higher profiles, it's do you remain authentic or do you start to pander towards what that's going to look like? And that was I was out of action yesterday when the chats were going on as a family event, and I got home and read the 116 messages through the thread, and I said, well, at what point do you pander, not change your approach, or do you just remain authentic as you have been because that's what built the platform to start with? So that was
the answer, James, is you got to stay authentic. You look at Rogan, he hasn't changed, very much at all.
We've had, I think, in that time, sorry to dominate the market, though, because you want to say something, but is that, we drop the F-bomb occasionally. We drop, we have a laugh. We take the piss every now and again. I mean, I think we've had one comment saying, oh, do you need to say the F-bomb, out of how many million views? So, do you take that out? Because we've got potential, powerful political whoever watching. Yeah. Do we still remain authentic or do we go, oh, no, we can't. We're going to be censored. And I'm like, fuck that.
It's a really interesting paradox and point that you raise, because one of the things that I think about a lot is that there's so many people in the world that are starting a podcast. Literally, it's never been we've spoken about all the hard work that went into making this podcast as professional as the setup is, but literally anyone can start a podcast these days. And so I know personally, I'm thinking, shit, if we're going to come on and have a chat and occupy someone's half an hour, 90 minutes, I want to make sure that we're always delivering things that are of value, things that are real time, things that people can execute on immediately, rather than just delivering generalized knowledge that people can now pick up from ChatGPT and whatnot. But we're also in this crazy time at the moment where there's, especially in Australia, there's so much, and the rest of the world, there's so much distrust in mainstream media. And I feel that in Australia, in America, it's a little bit different. You've got some really big voices like Rogan and Peterson, et cetera, PBD, whatnot. But in Australia, I feel like the podcasting scene is a little bit soft. Even some of the podcasters that were interviewing the two leaders that are running for head of country, I felt that those podcasts maybe missed the mark a little bit. So at the same time, I think just us being ourselves, asking hard questions, sometimes asking dumb questions, really asking the questions that most Australians want to hear answered, I think is a really, really valuable thing. So, I'm always mindful, and I know that you guys are always deep thinking with this with Perry and the boys, but I'm always mindful of not just kind of catering to what the algorithm wants, but keeping it as real as possible and being filling that void that I think Australia really needs right now to step up and have a voice that maybe is a little bit different from the mainstream.
Yep, I tend to agree, Mark. I think we've just got to keep doing our thing but guys, give us the feedback in the comments. Let us know what you want. With the Tuesday sessions, we are, where we bring a guest in, that's the one that sort of caused us a bit of consternation because we're trying to figure out what you guys want in the audience. But I had an insight, yesterday I was on the phone to Eric for an hour and I just said, I think what we want to do with a guest is ask these guests who've been in business, not so much how did you do it? Because a lot of that stuff's not transferable because for MX Store, for example, first of all, MX Store is a unicorn, not as in it's a billion-dollar company yet. It's on its way, perhaps, but as in it's a rarity, right, for a company in Australia to get to $100 million a year in online sales. And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, MX Store is a company that Eric, who's on the pod with us here, is one of four founders, I think there's four of you, built. A lot of that story is not actually transferable in this day and age. Like the cost of Google traffic today and versus cost of Google in 2010 when you guys started, it's a totally different landscape. Amazon, when I was doing Amazon, it's a different beast now. So a lot of that stuff's not transferable, and it's very niched. Like a lot of our listeners don't want to build an online e-commerce store. So we thought about what we might do is refocus the questions of these successful Aussie entrepreneurs towards, if you were starting again today, because we know or we believe that most of you guys listening really just want to figure out how to make a couple of hundred grand a year in a way that gives you freedom with your time, freedom with your family, the ability to travel, maybe 200 to 500 grand a year, let's say, which is a vastly different thing to building an MX store, which does $1 million a month, right? So if we ask the guys who started those businesses, most of the time, for most of these big business guys, a lot of them will say, you know, if I was to do it again, this is actually what I would do. I would do it smaller, or I would do it this way, or I'd do it that way. And we're thinking maybe directing the conversation towards what the audience wants and then dragging out of our guests, you know, their thoughts around that outcome. But I'd be interested in your comments.
I think that's super important, Adam. Like I used to be a voracious reader. I used to read like at least 30, 40 books a year or listen to audiobooks every year. And now I'm not even using up my Audible subscription. And the main reason behind that is because I'm seeking real-time content. Now, I'm in trading and macro, and I can only rely on real-time content. So I don't know if that bias is the same for everyone, but I feel like the advantage of a podcast is to get real-time executable content, whether it be for business or whatever it is, that property, shares, crypto, that people can use like right away. It's not that people want the quick fix, but most people have been banging their head against this wall for a long time, right? So hearing someone's generalized story of how they made it over 15 years isn't going to help. They kind of need that next quick thing that's going to help them gain some momentum. Well, that's at least my understanding. So I'd love to know if you guys think I'm on the mark there.
I think business has evolved rapidly too. Like with the playbook that might have worked 2 years ago, 3 years ago with e-com, as an example, has completely changed. Now you've got AI, and then you've got AI with, like, there's a guy we all follow talked about image generation, A/B split testing with two prompts, and you've got a school bag, hypothetically, a pink one and a blue one. Like that used to cost thousands of dollars to put a shoot together. And I'm not going to speak for Eric, but I can imagine the amount of infrastructure and the amount of the spend they've had to build their catalogs business, which is what it is, that was then. I mean, it's not relevant now. Oh, sorry. The principles are relevant. How you do it's not as relevant as it was then. So, I mean, things have evolved. So to Mark's point about, you know, what's working now, if you had the coin now, and because you are at still the cutting edge, I'm sure Eric's team and Dan and all those guys are at it. But their answer, if you asked them 12 months ago, what would they do right now to what they do today, would be vastly different.
Yeah. One thing for sure about people that are getting into business, and you, again, we say this, you can't compare someone's, you know, first inning to someone's ninth inning. But one thing I can say is one thing we should have done earlier, which we're still doing a lot of, and one thing I would be recommending to anyone watching this is build your own brands in-house as early as possible. Like you look at what we've done, and we're a catalog style business with over 100,000 SKUs as an example. And that's not going to be very relatable to a lot of people. But what we have now, what we're doing is creating our own in-house brands. Now that we have obviously a lot of customers and a big database, but with someone that's just getting into the market, I wouldn't be recommending going into a catalog style business. And what I mean by that is if you want to go into the furniture industry, as an example, don't go and sell every single piece of furniture, from couches to outdoor furniture to chairs to dining tables and bedside tables and beds, right? Just be an expert in beds. Like you look at the Koala mattress as an example, they are an expert at a mattress. They turned a boring industry on its head one brand named Koala, and they took it hard, right? And you look at that, and it's brand building, right? That's what you want to make sure of, is that you're always building your own internal brands. That's one thing I would highly, highly recommend.
Sorry, I'm going to jump in there.
Okay.
A bad thing, and they took it hard.
All right. All right.
Can I ask a question?
I seen James smirk. I seen Adam, like a little 12-year-old boy, look down and like pretend like he's
awesome. I have a serious question.
I heard
it. I have a serious question when you guys are finished talking around.
Touch professionals, Mark, down below here. We'll let the boys sit.
I've got a serious question here. And
it's the thing about remaining authentic.
We're real and relatable.
Exactly. There was. I don't know if you guys have heard of Naval. He's Naval.
Ravikant.
He's like a technologist and billionaire. I think he's a billionaire. I'm not sure. He's quite rich. Bought Bitcoin really, really early. He posted only on 13th of April 2025. If your brand is your moat, you won't have a moat for very much longer. And then someone posted underneath, the brand is not a moat. It's the glow from the fire. Stop feeding it and it fades. Real moats are built on distribution, IP, execution muscle. Brand just tells the world what you've already earned. And I think of that, and I think about the execution muscle that MX Store has built. Like that is what leads you guys to dominate your industry, is that execution and delivery muscle. But I also think of that and think, there's so many e-commerce businesses out there that are piggybacking off the execution muscle of Amazon or the execution muscle of Shopify. And I wonder how important brand is going to be moving forward, or will it change to the distribution mechanism? Do you guys want to hear about these high-level topics? Because this is the stuff that I love really flushing out with you guys to know which direction to go.
Then you've got a guy, and Naval's worth about 150, because I googled him the other day, his net worth, when I watched that exact article. Then you've got some of the Gold Coast who sold a company for 600 million, saying brand is your only mode in a city of Temu.
But he couldn't sell that brand for 600 million if he tried today. That brand is worth significantly less, and I think I know which brand you're talking about.
Branded products. But his brand was a catalog brand at that point in time as well. And that's what he sold. So
that's a timing thing, right? It's going back to a similar time as MX Store just exited in the last cycle. But
what people don't see, we won't go down that rabbit hole, right? But what people don't see, right? And this is what you need to decide. You need to have a real good think where you are in your life and how much time you want to actually spend and allocate, right, to the business or to the investing vehicle that you want to go down. Because we can sit here and say, MX, it's a 15-year-old business that for a long period of time did not make a dollar and every dollar got reinvested. Like, if you're willing to go without for that period of time, maybe you can build a business like that too. But the reality is majority of people are looking for a quick win, right? Because some people don't have 15 years. They don't have 10 years. They don't have 5 years. Right. And this is why people usually go to the path of least resistance and not go down the distribution model and use 3PLs and so they can travel the world and do what they want to do. And that is amazing at the same time. But it's asking the question, ask yourself the question on what type of business that you actually want to fulfill, what type of lifestyle you want. You look at Adam, run an MX store from Cyprus. It's physically impossible. Doesn't matter how good of a manager that he's got, it's not possible. Can he run multiple businesses from there? 110%, right? And that's what he values, right? You look at my business partner as an example, Ingevity, which we're going to be interviewing tomorrow, right? He's all about business. His whole world revolves around business. When he travels, he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it, right? He likes to be in the seat, working. That's what he wants to build, and he has a massive vision for that. But you got to ask yourself, what is it that you want? And like what you said earlier, Adam, some people want an extra 100 grand, an extra 200 grand, an extra $1 million, right? So make sure you're building the business that you actually want yourself, and ask yourself those tough questions. And don't compare yourself to MX Store. Don't compare yourself to this $150 million guy, right? Adam is an example. Look at the life he's living at the moment. Right? He's not $150, $200, $300 million guy. You don't need as much as what we all think to live a life that you actually want. And I'm actually going deep in myself, right? By sitting right on the outside, looking at different things and asking questions, going, okay, what do I like about what Adam has done? What do I like about what Mark is doing? What do I like about what this person is doing? And asking yourself the questions and sitting down and writing down what's important to you. And that's what we're not doing enough of.
I find a lot of entrepreneurs all come back to the same point, which is freedom. And that's why we all started. Whether we start a $100,000 a year profit business or a $100 million a year business like MX, what drives most of us is entrepreneurship. In entrepreneurship is freedom. But without going down that rabbit hole, let's talk. There's two things I want to talk about that are on the ticket today. One is, Mark, you posted in your Instagram this week one of your graphs. So those of you who don't know, we call Mark Macro Mark because he does like macro investing in Mark. So he looks at what's happening in the big picture in the world, like a war's happening, oil's going up, or, you know, uncertainty in the markets, gold and Bitcoin to go up. So he makes these sort of bets in the stock market using leveraged tools like options and that sort of stuff. Stuff that the rest of us don't know anything really about. And then so that's what Mark does. Eric's got this big e-com business, and you know, James and I are sort of like hustlers, so we just do whatever we think is going to work.
It's called flipping coins.
There's a flipping coins, yeah, heads or tails. But Mark, you put this post up where you had one of your graphs and it said, looks like I'm about to just make a shitload of money. And I'm like, that's awesome, but I don't understand the graph and I have no idea how you're going to make a shitload of money. So I want to dive into that. And also, you guys, Eric and Mark, have a real estate project that they're working on right now, which is Eric and James. I've got a project right now. They're going to knock down a building and potentially build 5 or 7 townhouses. Can't remember. But I want to talk about the financing piece because you guys have been working on that. Just around like what options are out for people listening that have an interest in real estate development but don't have any money or don't have access to the necessary money. Like what alternative forms of finance there are. So I think those are two solid, usable talking points for people watching the pod today that that they can take away and use. So, Mark, let's start with you. You posted this graph. Tell us what the graph was, and we're going to hammer you with questions till us dummies understand how you actually make money. So
yeah,
go awesome. Ahead and explain yourself.
Yeah, so I launched my first macro podcast. It's me having a crack at trying to put some content out there. And the first episode was in relation to Bitcoin and why Bitcoin matters, why it was created, and why I chose, like it would have been 2 weeks ago now, to go all in on the amount of cash that I was going to allocate for my dad to Bitcoin. So, video,
you're buying some stuff for your dad right at the moment.
Yeah. So dad's got a little bit of extra money that he's kind of gifted to me to kind of manage for him. And the number one bet that I'm making for him is Bitcoin. That is where I'm putting the majority of that money. And over the last 3 months, I'd been allocating it because I'd been telling you boys since maybe December that when Bitcoin was 110, that I thought it would come down and hit 75K, and it got down to a low of 74. So when from 88,000 down to 74, I've been allocating his money slowly. And I think we had about 130,000 to invest. I had invested about half of it. And then 2 weeks ago, I decided to go all in because a bunch of macro things that I was looking at, chart indicators, patterns, and basically the big thing was the dysfunction in the treasury market. Bond yields had started to spike. I thought, you know what? I might be early, but I also want to front run the chaos that I think is coming. And over the last 2 weeks, that chaos has been unfolding. So I went all in on his Bitcoin. And I have my own Bitcoin HODL stack. That's probably my only position that I don't trade around. It's the only position that I just add to and continue to add to. I've actually bought that in my super.
So just pause for a second. You said that treasury yields were starting to spike. What's a treasury and what is a treasury yield? Just for people listening.
Yeah. So US government, Australian government, their mechanism for running the country is obviously the taxes they receive from its citizens and then any additional. So a lot of countries run deficits, which mean they have to borrow money in order to run the country. They do it through what's called a treasury bond, and that
or a
is
T-bill,
they're different. It's important to know a T-bill is a short-term loan that the government takes out, so it's anywhere from a month to 2 years. That's a T-bill, and a treasury coupon, so treasury treasury bonds, I'm also referring to 3, 5, 10, 30-year loans that they take out from the private sector, insurance companies, foreign central banks. Like, there's all kinds of entities that are buying US treasuries. And in this instance, we're talking about US treasuries.
Can I make it just for dummies? The government's saying, lend me $1 million and I'll pay you 2%, 3%, 4%. And it's backed by the government printing more money to pay off the bills. Is that right? Somewhere close?
Exactly. So if you were to invest in, say, Brazil or Argentina, or not to pick on, you know, South American countries, but if you were to invest in their treasury bonds, there's been a huge history where they haven't been able to repay back their debt. So their debt, third world countries, so to speak, or developing countries, emerging countries, their debt is not seen as secure. The most secure country debt in the world is the US debt because they have a money printer. They're the country with the money printer, and it's like 70% of the global transactions or something like that. So yes. And basically what had started to happen is the treasury yields, so the interest rate at which the government borrows at, went from like under 4%, and it started going up to like 4.5%. And that happened like in the course of like 3 or 4 days. That is like very, very fast. That causes all kinds of problems. And I don't want to go into too much detail, but the main reason why that causes problems is because that collateral, a lot of the hedge funds in the world, they basically leverage on top of that collateral. They take out margin on top of that collateral.
Just one sec. So if I go and buy a treasury bond, let's call it one, and it's at 3%, in the last 6 days, it's gone to 6%, as the owner of that treasury bond, I'm better off by 3, is my bond worth more or less?
So if you lent the money to the government at 3% and it's a 10-year treasury, you will continue to get 3%.
So
but
it's fixed.
But if you went to sell that treasury on the marketplace, on the open marketplace, in the secondary market, you probably lost somewhere between 30 and 50% of the value of that treasury. Now, if you hold it, it's offering half the rate of new treasuries that are coming into existence. So if you went to sell that before expiration, you would lose on that capital. If you held it until expiration, you get your 3%, you get your money back at expiration, 10 years or whatever it is.
A bit like a commercial property, like what we talked about in the last pod, where I said I had a building, let's say the building has $100,000 of income. If you sell it at a time where investors are prepared to take a 5% return in the market, that values that building at, you know, $2 million. If it's got 100 grand of income, yeah, it'd be a $2 million valuation because 100 grand is 5%. But if all of a sudden the yields change to 10%, that means the market's only prepared to pay $1 million because the 100,000 of income is now 10%. And so you're saying that's effectively happened with bonds.
I guess, not to that margin. Yeah, but I guess what I was just trying to say is it's really counterintuitive for most people to understand. And I was just trying to give it a very basic version that it doesn't change. It's actually worth less when the interest rate goes higher, not more.
So why is that bad, Mark? So why is that bad? Why does that create liquidity issues, volatility issues?
So there's two primary reasons why that is bad. The first reason is all of these hedge funds and financial entities that have taken out margin to buy stocks, like a lot of them have got these 60-40 portfolios, which I think are dead, but we'll go into that another day. They take out margin to buy stocks or to buy gold or to buy whatever else. Now, when the value of their duration drops and the interest rate spikes, they have to take down that leverage. When they take down that leverage, they get their risk managers tap the portfolio managers on the shoulder and say, take down your risk exposure, which means they have to put those treasuries for sale on the secondary market. But the problem is everyone's thinking the same thing. No liquidity means there's more sellers than buyers. And so that is a reflexive loop that causes the yield to continue to spike higher. That, mixed with the fact that you've probably got foreign entities that are selling treasuries, maybe there's a bit of trade war, a bit of gamesmanship going on from China. And then the third reason, and probably the most important reason, is if the interest rate goes from 3% to 6%, that means that when the government has new auctions and the US has to refinance about $7 trillion to $10 trillion over the next 12 months, they have to refinance their debt at a higher rate. So their interest repayments on that debt just doubled. Now, in the US, that's a really big problem because the interest repayments on their debt are already over 100% of the receipts that they take in from taxes. So before they even go to Medicare, before they even go to roads and infrastructure and military, their debt expense is 100% of their annual turnover.
Mark,
that's a business going bust.
Yeah, I want to unpack that. So we just need to pause because most of these pods, when you say what you just heard, the podcast just keeps going and you missed a lot of really important stuff. And it's really important stuff, guys, listening. I know this might sound laborious to you, but Lawrence Lepard said this on the Bitcoin podcast that we did, where he said once a country's debt to GDP goes to 130%, it's happened 12 times in history, and all 12 times it's been a major currency crisis and a restructuring. So what you're saying, I just want to really – so I think everybody understands in broad terms there are these big – professional entities that invest money, whether they be hedge funds, institutions, whatever. They have this 60-40 portfolio. They have a portfolio of things that they're investing in, and almost always part of that portfolio is US treasuries, right? So they've got different investments across the risk curve. So US treasuries at one end, the lowest risk because the counterparty is the US government, and then
they have been the lowest risk over the last years.
Traditionally, the US government's been the safest place you can invest your money, even safer than a bank share, because the US government isn't going broke. This is what everyone thinks, right? So all of a sudden, when the treasury yields go up, it means the value of the bonds that they hold, so if they've got US treasuries, if all of a sudden the yields are climbing, the value of those bonds, which create a percentage of their portfolio, is falling. Just like what happened to me with my commercial real estate when I sold two of my buildings when yields were really low, all of a sudden I've got this third property over here, which was, let's say, based on those yields, the property was worth $9 million in the example that we gave last week on the pod. But because I waited and the yields went up to 7% from 3.5%, the value of my property basically halved. So all of a sudden on my personal balance sheet, I lost half of the value of that property as equity. Right?
And so that's the exact point. It's a balance sheet problem, right? It's a balance sheet mismatch.
My net worth dropped on my balance sheet when National Australia Bank says, Adams, what's your assets and liabilities? Now that the yields have gone back up in commercial real estate, as interest rates have gone up, I have to now count that one remaining commercial property at much lower value. See, what you're saying is the same thing's happening for these big institutions. Their risk manager saying, hey, the value of your portfolio over here has fallen, so you need to restructure so you don't go outside of your LVRs, basically, loan-to-value ratio kind of thing.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable Business Coaching Program. It's over a 12-month period, and with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You can get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching. And register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
Pretty much, that's
when you say the US Treasury market, the bond market, you hear these podcasts where they say the bond market drives everything. What you're saying is it's because nearly every major investor in the world holds some US Treasuries, which have the ability to restructure their position in the market. And when the yields move, everybody is affected because it's the most common investment cornerstone of these institutions. That makes sense if it's correct. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there is more money in I need to check this, but I believe there's more money in bonds than there is in real estate globally. I think there's something like 400. Now remember, that's 400 trillion of debt. There's a balance sheet, there's a liability, and there's an asset. So someone owes that debt. Governments owe a lot of it, and then someone owns that debt. And so the biggest asset class in the world is bonds, and that's why it's so important. And if you consider, I know a lot of people don't, but if you consider a country a business, well, countries are the largest businesses in the world, and that's why the bond market is so big, because it's the funding mechanism to fund the running of countries.
And so when the US government starts paying more for these yields, what message is that sending to the market?
Yeah, well, that's the issue at the moment. There is a loss of trust in the US. Like, with the bond yields rising, the US dollar is falling versus the European currency and other currencies. Stocks are falling, right? And that's a dangerous recipe. When stocks are falling, bonds are rising, and the dollar is falling, that's a pretty dangerous recipe. It means that a lot of capital that's in the US is leaving the US, and it's chasing another home.
And so why did you put your dad's money? Because if you're ever going to invest money that you give a shit about, probably more than even yourself, it's going to be your old man. So
that was the kicker. That's the kicker, right? So the probably the time and tested best option that's got 2,000 years of history is gold. But gold has recently gone from 2,200 to 3,500. And so I thought, well, we're a little bit late with gold. Gold, in my opinion, looking at the technicals, will pull back to 2,6 to 2,8. Might not, but that's where I'd like to buy some gold. And so Bitcoin has corrected from 110 down to 75. So I thought, well, Bitcoin, it's gold, and then it's Bitcoin that is like the antidote to this concoction of a perfect shitstorm that's occurring at the moment. Now, like you mentioned it before, that value at risk, or that leverage takedown, can cause all assets to come down as everybody scrambles to sell what they can to pay their margin. So Bitcoin can still get a flash crash down, all that can happen. But my bet was that it wouldn't, that it would start, that it would diverge eventually. And so I went all in on dad's Bitcoin, and I've got my Bitcoin HODL stack. So that is laying the table for the chart that I then posted. So when the video went live, Bitcoin was about 82,000. And then I woke up this morning and Bitcoin shot up to like 88,000. The reason I posted that and said I'm about to make money this week. And did you have a question, Adam?
I was going to say, hearing you talk is making me understand a turn of phrase that I've heard said quite a few times in the Bitcoin community by very smart people like Peter Dunworth and like Michael Saylor. And they keep saying that when the finance world, TradFi, which is traditional finance world, figures out that the perfect collateral is Bitcoin, there's going to be a huge demand for Bitcoin. And what they mean by that is, what you've just explained is that in these large portfolios, these portfolio managers are obligated to take a spread of risks, right? So they've got US treasuries and then maybe leveraged options or something at the other end. Bitcoin, what they've been saying, stocks, whatever, you know. Bitcoin, they're saying, has been misunderstood, because once the capital markets understand that it is perfect collateral, what they mean by that is it can be liquidated 24/7, 7 days a week, without any counterparty in the middle. It can serve as a cornerstone for a portfolio's valuation. So if a margin call has to occur, it can be liquidated on a weekend at 10 p.m. anywhere in the world. Whereas with stocks, they have to open on Monday morning in New York before they can be liquidated. So Bitcoin can actually reduce the volatility in markets because it can happen instantaneously. It's very interesting. I'm 7 years or 8 years into the Bitcoin journey, I'm still putting the pieces together, and hearing you talk now helps me understand its role at a higher level in the landscape of global finance.
And the other really important mechanism in the design of Bitcoin is that it's capped at 21 million. there's never going to be more Bitcoin. Whereas gold, they could find more gold. They could mine asteroids for gold. They can, when the price of gold goes up, miners can increase the supply of gold, and that can bring that back down to an equilibrium. There's not going to be any more Bitcoin. So the person that has figured this out, probably, I mean, there's a lot of people that have figured it out, but the person that is actually taking action, the most action on figuring all this out, is Michael Saylor with MicroStrategy. Now, whether you think he's going to blow up or this, that, whatever, basically what he's doing is taking this problem that we've been speaking about for the last 20 minutes, and he's saying, I'm going to provide you, all people out there that have capital, a vehicle of your choice that has some sort of exposure to Bitcoin. You can either own Bitcoin, you can either own my stock that owns Bitcoin, you can own a bond, you can lend me money to buy Bitcoin, and I'll give you an interest rate for that money, and you'll have rights to future shares and things like that. So he's creating all these different financial instruments. Effectively, what he's trying to do is create a new financial system off the back of the pristine collateral that is Bitcoin. Now, will he succeed? Won't he succeed? We don't know. But so far, given the backdrop, the asymmetric risk, and that means for what you could lose to what you could gain, is so great that many more people are waking up and starting to take that risk.
It's uncapped. Asymmetric, guys, means the upside is virtually uncapped, right? Like it could, you know, in theory, it could be an outsized, but it's not like a business bet where if you're selling motocross parts in Australia, like Eric is, there's a limit to the size of the market.
An easy way to analogous to it would be, let's say that you have a property development, right? Everyone understands property, and you need to invest $1 million of your own money in this property development. And the potential return on that $1 million is $1 million. That's not an asymmetric bet, because there's the potential to lose $1 million and there's a potential to gain $1 million. Asymmetry is when the potential to lose, when the potential to win is much greater than the potential to lose. So if I put $1 million into Bitcoin and Bitcoin 100Xs, I mean, I'm not good at math, but that's an asymmetric return, right? So, and Mark, so asymmetry is...
So walk us through this one trade. Well, actually, before we walk through this one trade, tell us of a couple of your recent wins, cash on cash basis, because I want people to put this in real terms. Like, you put X amount in, and you put X amount out. Don't go into the detail of the past deals, but just give us a couple of examples of, you know, the bottom line value of knowing this. So the people who are a bit glazed over go, holy fuck, I might need to listen a bit closer here and struggle through my pain.
And also just to add to that, Mark, a little past in the stock market as well is, you know, there's an analogy of saying, yeah, eat like a sparrow and shit like an elephant. In other words, you know, people take small wins, and when they lose because their fucking emotional retardation gets out of control, and they'll take the big loss when it's down instead of waiting for the market to pull back. They don't believe in the story and the narrative. But also with that, then a win-loss ratio also has a factor to it too. If you're going to set your wins at X and your losses at what over your past 10 or 15 trades, what is your current win-loss ratio?
I don't know. I probably should go back and analyze this. I'm actually going to get my accountant to do it at the end of the financial year. But I can tell you with almost certainty that my loss ratio would be much higher than my win ratio. I would lose many more times than I win on trades, like if you looked at the trades. But the value of my winners is always much higher because I press those much more. So even the best traders in the world, you'd be hard-pressed to find a trader that has a better win ratio than 60%. Right? Like most of them are batting at 50-50, but when they lose, they mitigate their downside. And when they win big on maybe one or two bets out of those 200 trades they did for the year. Right. So yeah.
Mark, on balance, what would you expect as a trader at your level, self-taught, right? At this stage of your career, what do you think is a reasonable return throughout the year? If you had $1 million of capital, what would be your goal?
I mean, I'm quite aggressive, right? But I'll tell you about a trade that I'm currently doing, and then I'll try and go back a step and explain it. So just recently, I've put about 130,000 US into GameStop options, right? Now, they're not the shares. They're the options to own the shares. So it's something like my investment is 130,000, and I control something like 600,000 US worth of GameStop shares if I was to exercise those shares, right? My bet is, and this is where I said I was going to make a little bit of money this week, is because the bets that I'm taking are the big asymmetric bets where I can lose everything, but my upside is massive. So the two bets that I'm taking at the moment are options in MSTR and options in GameStop. So I'll talk you through the GameStop one because that's the most crazy, and I'm not recommending that anyone go out and copy it.
Not financial advice, guys. This is
not just financial advice. This is purely for entertainment because I could lose it all, and that would be funny for most of you to watch. So 130,000 in GameStop options. The options expire somewhere between December this year and December 2027.
So very long.
Very long. My hypothesis is they've got $5 billion in cash. The one of the guys on the board, Ryan Cohen, who's invested a lot in the company and has been part of this whole meme fiasco, is spending a lot of time with Michael Saylor, and they've also had permission to they've had a green light. The board has given them a green light to buy Bitcoin. So my bet is that they're going to start doing what Michael Saylor's doing and buying Bitcoin with their cash, and they're going to start borrowing money, so issuing bonds to buy Bitcoin. Now, if they do this, there's a fair chance. I mean, GameStop is already 10x'd on its own without this. There's a fair chance if they do this and the street gets hold of it and they continue to do it like Saylor, the GameStop will 10x. If GameStop 10x's, my 130,000 could be any worth anywhere from 2 mil to 4 mil, just depending on when I exit those positions. Huge risk. I'll probably sell way before then because I'll be like, I don't want to lose 500 grand. I'm up 500. I don't want to lose it. So, but if the hypothesis was to play out and GameStop was to do a 10x, I could make anywhere from 2 to 4 mil on those options. So,
It's just half that.
What I'll do, I'll give you the exact figures because there's an options calculator that I can use that can show you exactly what those figures will be. Maybe on the next episode of the pod, I'll run you through for 5 minutes to show you these are my options. This is what happens if it goes to X, and you can see the numbers on the chart. I just don't know how to set it up to do it now.
How do you manage?
And also on that mark, as they come closer to expiry, the value curve that you've got to actually make a decision before expiry as well, because I think that's the other thing.
You don't want to be holding your options to expiry because you've got time decay. So the option, so 2026 options are cheaper than 2027 options, or mid 2025 are much cheaper because they have consider it like insurance policy, right? If you insure your house for 3 years, that premium is going to be more expensive than you insure your house for 6 months. So they're effectively insurance policies.
In short, people, just to wrap this session up, this is the fucking biggest casino on the planet, and Mark's doing the ladder.
How do you manage the emotion around it though, Mark? Right, like that's a lot of people.
Valium's a good thing.
Is it because you're investing only a certain percentage of your cash at hand or wealth, and going, okay, if I lose this 130, it'll piss me off, but it's not going to take me to the cleaners?
I could go into all the philosophical reasons and all the lessons I've learned over 4 years that helped me to manage it. But the bottom line is this: if you can't sleep at night, your position sizing is too big. Take it down. If you can sleep at night, then you've got it positioned right for the risk reward. That's the easiest way I can sum it up. If you can't sleep at night, your position size is too big.
Yeah. And that's the same thing in any investment, if you ask me, right? Whether it's in property, whether it's in business, whatever it is, if you can't sleep at night and it's keeping you up, there's a problem, right? Either got to reduce the risk, lower the LVR, sell something, or just invest less into something that you're looking at 10 times in. Because like you said, you might not hit that 10 times. You might hit that 2 times and take it out anyways because you don't want to lose a higher amount.
Exactly.
I like that, yeah, Mark. So, I think that metric is not one that's taught, right? Like, everybody tries to talk charts, but that's actually a really human metric because it takes into account a lot of things. It takes into account your net worth and also your knowledge. And your net worth and knowledge combined is very unique to you, right? Like,
that's different. That prefrontal part of your cortex has been developed over millions and millions of years of evolution, and it's there to protect you from danger. So listen to it, dummy. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So the MSTR play, just quickly, MSTR is the ticker symbol for MicroStrategy, guys, for those listening, yeah. Which is a company founded by Michael Saylor, who we were just talking about before. So just
to wrap it all up, I basically got a bet on MSTR. So I've got long-term options on MSTR and I've got long-term options on GameStop. And at the moment, when Bitcoin goes up, then these companies go up. When these companies go up, my options go up more because I'm using leverage and options are leveraged. I can maybe take you through the exact numbers of these trades. And to answer your question, I basically sold all my equities, right? Like, for a bit of a shameless plug, the next episode of my podcast is I'm going to talk about why I sold all my Tesla stock. And I basically switched to options to protect my downside risk, right? So in short, I'm betting with, you know, $180,000 of money and the rest of my portfolio is sitting in cash because I don't like the equity market at the moment, but I'm taking this risk because I'm bullish on Bitcoin because of all the macro stuff we spoke about before. So if I lose that, it's a small, yeah.
In simple terms, what Mark's saying is, forget the word option. You're studying what these companies are doing and you're betting on them, but instead of just buying the shares to bet on them, you're buying options which give you exposure to more shares, but also with more downside risk. There's a guy
less that downside risk, but less downside risk, right? Less downside risk than owning the shares. That's the kicker, right? You have less downside risk than owning the shares, but all of your option premium can go to zero. So if you were to own the same equivalent shares, right, you've actually got less risk. But your whole premium could go to zero.
So all of your investment can go to zero, but as a percentage of the upside's leveraged and the downside's fixed is what you're saying. Exactly. There's an interesting guy in the Bitcoin space. Just his name escapes me right now. He's this crazy German-looking dude with the blonde hair. He lives on the Palm in Dubai. I watched him in a podcast, and his video is always like, you have 48 hours. You know, it's like real clickbaity stuff, right? But he's legit wealthy, right? Like, he's got the house and the Dubai. And I watched him on a pod where he was interviewed long form, and he was a very interesting guy. Nothing like the personality that he portrays on YouTube. Anyway, they asked him, how did you make your apparently hundreds of millions of dollars out of Bitcoin? And he said, I was driving taxis and do you know this story? And he basically
said, I know the guy, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. So he said, I waited for the Bitcoin bottom, what I thought would be the bottom. When it was at $69,000, I did all my study on where I thought the bottom was. And when it got down to about $18,000, he said, I think we're near the bottom. And so he said, I had this chunk of cash and I would bet, he was using leverage and he was using 100x leverage on Bitcoin. And he went in and he said, the bottom line is if it goes up, you know, 10%, he makes 10 times that. And if it goes down 10%, he loses
100
all.
Times that.
100 yeah, 100 times that. That. Sorry, 100 times that. But if it goes down, he loses all of it. So what he was doing was he was taking 10% of his savings at 18,000, putting it in. And he said, it dropped down 10%, I lost everything. Then when it was down at that new point, I put in another bet and then I lost everything again. And he said, I could have done it 10 times before I was wiped out. But on the third or fourth time, he actually did pick the bottom and then 100x'd. And he said, that's how I got rich. And I was like, wow, that's actually really simple, right? Like,
and that's the part we edit out of the podcast because it's gambling.
Yeah, well, and it's kind
no,
of...
But it's not really gambling. No, wait. It's gambling the first... If the first time you... If you're listening to this podcast and you go out and take out 100x leverage and you go out and or do this option strategy and it's the first time you've ever done it, it's gambling. It's gambling. Yeah, but over time, I've lost and gained and lost and gained and done this so many times that I've worked out where my risk tolerances are, where I could lose, where I could risk, that at the moment, it's an informed bet, right? Now, at this point, it's an informed bet. But if you go and hear, like listen to some guy you hear on the podcast and go and do the same strategy, you're gambling.
Yeah.
Right.
But it does show the, I think, the importance of, you know, starting this journey. If this is in your blood and it's your appetite,
this is what
Julian Petrulius does. This is what a lot of these guys who make a lot of money become real experts and really focused. And they're obviously managing their own risk and they're starting really small. And I'm absolutely not advocating that you should start out and do this. But what I'm trying to point towards is there are certain people, like we all have a mutual friend who's a chain smoker who sits up all night and makes a metric shit ton of cash. And then literally, he's an Aussie guy. You know who it is who I'm talking about. Ben, we know you're listening. And, you know, Ben's such a legend that he'll go and make, like he told me this story, you know, the other day, last week. He said, I made $1.7 million this week. And he goes, I'm fucking fried. And so I'm down at the local RSL and I made $1,000 on the pokies and I took my money. And because he says, you know, because I'm a trader, when you're up, you're up, you take the win. He said, these fucking bogans were giving me shit, saying, you're walking out with my money. He says, listen, cunt, I don't give a fuck about this $1 million. Just leave me the fuck alone. My pokies. And he said, this was a fucking quiet. They're giving me shit over $1,000 win on a pokie.
Oh, relative, huh?
Yeah, he goes, little did they know I made $1.7 million in the last 48 hours sitting up chain smoking through the night. So it's just these guys are around, you know, that do this shit. I'm not one of them. I couldn't do it, but I am fascinated by what you do, Mark, and other people like you. And I hope the listeners are, you know, enjoying. Sorry about the C-bomb. That's actually
no, but Adam, you say that you couldn't do it, and maybe you wouldn't like do it regularly. But if you own a big position in Bitcoin, if you own a big position in MicroStrategy, there's a point in time, like say MicroStrategy goes from where it is now to $1,000. There's a point in time when if you know enough about options, you could use options to then protect your downside or to profit from that downside. And you would only have to do that every time that the stock has a big run up. And, you know, for say 2% of your entire position, you could buy puts. And if those puts pay off, then you're going to protect your downside. And if they don't, it keeps going up, you lose your 2%. But that is the way we need to think about it. Benny is I say this with respect. He's out there to win it. He's there to win it. I'm not going to call him a gambler, but he's there to win it. But the way that most people could be thinking about options is insurance and how to protect capital, right? And so, some people are out there and they're in it to win it, but there's also, you know, also ways to
protect. I think the interesting thing here is there's a – you've got a thesis, like you've got a reason for taking these positions, and you're just using options as a way to increase your exposure to upside. The win, if upside. Yeah. And Ben says the same thing to me because I've got a big Bitcoin position. He says you should be spending 2 or 3% on insurance by buying puts. And I've actually just got to stop being lazy and start to learn this. And
you wouldn't insure your $7 million house, right? So how the hell can you not insure your however $1 million Bitcoin position? You've got to do it. You have to do it.
Yeah. It's interesting. And the problem is all you fucking technical guys are so bloody, there's so much jargon embedded in what you do that the rest of us punters just get left on the sidelines. So I think if you guys have enjoyed this little unpack with Mark, even if you're still sitting there going, I don't fully understand everything, but the punter in me loves this shit, let us know in the comments. Like, have you enjoyed this discussion with Mark? And should we come back and circle back every now and then and go deeper and learn more about this? And because I find it fascinating, and I think it's something as a part of your overall income generation. What Eric talked about, you know, if your goal is freedom, if you've got, you know, $10,000, you just try to parlay into 20 and 20 into 40 and so on over time. There's a lot of people that have done very well by becoming educated traders. So it's interesting.
Yeah, Adam, you remember when MicroStrategy dropped like 10% on earnings? It dropped from like 330 to like 238. I bought $20,000 US worth of MicroStrategy options at that time, and again, it was risk. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna sell a couple of $100,000 of my Bitcoin because I want to take the risk off the table, and I'm gonna put it into MicroStrategy. I'm gonna put $20,000 into MicroStrategy. Well, MicroStrategy went up to like 500 and my options went up to $150,000. And I messaged you that day and I said, hey, I just sold my options for $150,000. It cost me 20. Right. And so again, I want people to hear that I took down my exposure to Bitcoin and then took a small percentage of that and took a bigger bet on MicroStrategy and I 10x'd it, right? Like, so now I'm making the same bet, but instead of 20,000, I'm making that bet with 60,000. So let's see what happens over the next couple of months. We'll check in.
Was that the day you bought those business class tickets to Europe for 3 months? Was that the same day? I'm just curious.
To a options conference. It's funny because, you know, like Ben did that. He rings me, goes, Adam, I got this thesis. And, if you got any spare cash, give it to me. I'll invest it for you. And I was like, you know, no worries. And, I gave him, what did I give him? 10 or 20 grand. Yeah, he's sucking on the durries the whole time. And the next day, he gave me five times back what I gave him. And I said, anytime you want to do that, Ben, he says, I'm never fucking doing that again. I did it with three people. They're all fucking crazy except you. He said, they're all too emotional. They're ringing me up every 5 seconds. Said, sell it.
You want to talk about asymmetry? Like I sent Ben a few $1,000 as well. And I don't even know if it's up, if it's down. I think it's up, but it's like I know that I could lose it all, but I know that it could also turn it into 500 grand. And so, like, that's an asymmetric blind gamble right there.
I've watched him do it. Like, I watched him make over $1 million in a week just doing this stuff, you know. And but at the end of the week, he's like just down the RSL, cool, pulling the pokies, having a beer, and just going, I just need to unwind.
I want to do it all over again on Monday.
Is it amazing when you go from one gambling den at home to another one where you're to this other gambling den where there's alcohol involved to wind down for gambling stress to start with?
You can't just go cold turkey. You have to kind of
clearly ease off. You know, but he says to me, you know, like, it's ruining me. Like, it's high pressure, even for someone like Ben, who's super intelligent and, you know, it's not fair. Yeah, it's full on. It's not easy.
Yeah. And like, I can't do it. I can't stay up. I go to bed, you know, I don't know if anyone cares, but I go to bed like after Frankie goes to bed, 8:30, 9, and I'll get up for the last hour or two of trading. You know, it used to be I could get up at 6 and trade till 8. Now I have to get up at 5 and trade till 6 because of the daylight savings. But I can't do it. I just do what I can in that last hour. And I kind of do my research during the day when the market's closed.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we didn't get to the property stuff today, but we have hit the hour, so we're going to call it. But we will loop back to that, Eric and James, because I think people want it. And we do have a product shout-out. So, guys, the reason we want you guys to pay attention to these is this is not paid sponsorship. This is not your normal ads that you hear on podcasts. These ads that we put in at the end of a podcast are from you guys, our listeners. It's your businesses that we are promoting for free as a thank you for listening to the podcast. And you get to see what other people who listen to this podcast are out there doing in the world. So, Eric, over to you. Who have we got this week?
All right. So this gentleman actually reached out through Instagram and through our email, sent the details. And I said, you know what? Come down to the office I'll be in today, to the studio. You come check it out. And he's been a listener since the beginning. So he came here today. It was actually this morning. And he was quite nervous. And it was just so interesting because when he got here, he's like, I've been listening to you guys from the beginning. You know, I've never been in business before. This is my first business. And if it wasn't for you guys and the Unemployable podcast, I wouldn't be in the position that I am today to actually create this business, which is amazing to hear. And it just reminds me and us of why we're doing what we're doing. And so this whole idea came from him sitting in the bathtub. He's from the UK. And
James,
they enjoy their baths. And I enjoy a bath once in a while as well, to be honest with you, just to recharge. Not that I do it enough. But anyways, and he's in the tub and he cracked a beer and this idea came to his head. And this idea is called Blokes Who Soak. Now, the packaging...
I'm just going to put it on mute for a minute because there's so many things you can't say right now. I've cracked a beer in the bar.
Right.
And you got like this.
Right. Right, Blokes Who Soak. This is a pack of four, all right, which I'll open up. But basically, what this is for the hardworking man, a gentleman who's earned his rest, time to crack that can, relax, and recharge. And what it is, it's a magnesium It's like a magnesium bath salt, right, with pure essential oils. And this one's actually sandalwood, black pepper, and bergamot. But as you can see here, it's just, it's really on point.
That's the whole, so cool. That's the whole so branding. Cool. I mean,
like it even has, you know, the expiry on the bottom, even on the side. It's got like standard drinks, zero. So
if this guy's listening, like we're doing a lot of work at the moment to try and create UGC and content for Meta ads. This is the type of product and the packaging and the story. This is the type of product that lends itself to something that could blow up and get millions of views really, really quick. He has to start experimenting. He has to start experimenting ASAP because it's one of those things that when it goes, it'll go quick.
So guys, just
it could go Father's Day, Christmas. It like they're your periods where this thing could just blow.
Exact conversation I had with him. 100%.
We got to bring the audio listeners into the picture here because they're not able to see what Eric just showed. So it's a beautiful box, very masculine styling, and inside of it are what look like tins of beer. They literally are cans, and you crack
the cans.
They look like, you know, they look like a beer can sort of thing. And
they are
a beer can. Take the tab off and you empty the basket.
They are a beer can, and I'm actually going to open it in a second. Because
tip it over the
deck. the IP behind it, right, is he's actually got chemicals in here to make it sound exactly. I think it's bicarbonate soda that they add in here. Yep. So he's really, really thought about this. But as you can see here, see the emblem, the logo there. Yeah. It's actually a proper gentleman with a beard, and he's got this insert, right? Like crack open relaxation, feel godlike. The brew a bath soak. In a beer can, built for hardworking men who need to switch off, soak up, and chill out. You can thank us later. Relax, recharge, reset.
What a legend.
Now,
it's one of the best, ones
I've ever seen. Before I open this up, he's launching this on May 16th, right? So basically in 3 weeks, he's got the website. The website is blokeswhosoak.com.au, and he's giving away the first 50 for free. But I specifically told him that the only way you give them to the 50 is you need their email, you need their mobile number, and they either need to take a video or give you a very good written testimonial when they use the product. But I said, get them to send you a video because then you're going to have 50 pieces of content straight away, UGC content, and you're giving them for free. So May 16th, make sure you go to blokeswhosoak.com.au to get your free the brew. It's called the Brew Magnesium Power Soak. They come in single packs and they come in a 4-pack. For pricing and stuff, you could go to the website. Just so you know, James and Mark, there's one sitting here for you so you guys can test.
Awesome. I was just going to say that around that UGC, there may be a couple of do's and don'ts around that when you're in the bath cracking that can. Just
say, I wouldn't be recommending
it. It could get a little out of hand, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. But this guy, honestly, is an absolute gentleman. He's been watching the pod since the beginning. That's where he got the idea from. Idea. And he's been listening to us.
That's awesome.
And he's got some graphic design skills behind him. He's created the entire box, everything. So listen
sounds like a dude who's like listened to a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about and implemented it and executed on it. So well done, boss.
Let's hear it open.
Ready?
Yep.
That sort of made me thirsty at the same time.
How good is that,
Eric,
right?
Can you lather a bit on yourself? Can you pour it in?
It actually says do not drink, but he says when you pour it in, you pour one of these in the bathtub, you literally within 20 minutes feel very, very relaxed, obviously with the magnesium and all the other stuff. And the smell, like it's unbelievable. It's like it's a very manly smell, sandalwood, black pepper, bergamot. But honestly, James, for your dates, it's right up your alley.
Well, I was actually thinking on a serious note there, right? Is catering for the masculine man. Think about how many men, I'm talking about specifically, like doing it in a champagne sort of style one, the other half of the men who are not heterosexual, i.e. gay men, that would go bananas over. It's so giftable. Every birthday, it's
so giftable, man. Like, what do I get my for my husband for, you know, or for Father's Day, for his birthday?
James, I have to push back on that. God, I don't want this poor bloke to go spend money on the wrong avatar. But the gay men have already been using soaps and bath salts for many, many years.
Exactly. Did you have to say push back on it, Mark? I've got an objection to this or something along those lines.
All right, let's not sully this brand any further.
So that was. I just want to give a big shout out to Brian from Blokes Who Soak, who literally DM'd us, drove down here. He's based on the Gold Coast, and he's coming back tomorrow to watch the two pods that we're doing live, which is pretty cool.
That was one of the best ones we've seen. We should cut that up into a short and post on YouTube.
Yeah. So, guys, the best way to show support for an entrepreneur is not to tell them they've done a great job. It's not to encourage their ideas, to get your credit card out and buy their shit. And then once you've done that, leave them a good review. And, you know, if you're an entrepreneur building something, like, you know, this is how you do it. And this is how you sort of pay it forward. When it's your time and you've got your product live, send it to us. We'll do a shout out like this for you. But let's get behind Brian. Let's help him make this a success. And the best way is just go buy a pack of salts or go get on the 50 and make a great video for him.
And to send your products, just email hello@unemployable.com.au with your product idea or the product that you have. And then our team will contact you, give you our PO box, and you can send it there and you'll be on one of the Friday pods.
Also, put a note in there, guys, giving us a little bit of the backstory, because the backstory... people don't buy products, they buy stories. And I want to buy this not because it looks cool, because it does, but I want to buy it because I want to help the guy. You know, I like the story. So tell us the human story about you. And, you know, we did this earlier with Josh and his new product that I just put on my Instagram. And I had people DMing me going, I just bought this to support him. And it was so cool to see that. So let's get behind and do that. Guys, thanks again for another great week. Hope you guys are enjoying the pods out there listening. And we'll see you next week. Remember, the best way you can help us is by sharing the pod, telling friends, hey, go and listen to these guys. I'm getting value out of this. It's helping me get ahead. It's helping my thinking. It's helping me move towards freedom financially, personally, geographically, all of that good stuff. Boys, thanks for being here. See you on the next one.
Thank you.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.